In May of last year, President Obama traveled to Camden, New Jersey.
I've come here to Camden to do something that might have been unthinkable just a few years ago. And that's to hold you up as a symbol of promise for the nation.
The president singled out the Camden Police Force for special praise. Camden used to be one of the few cities in the country to have more murders per capita than Baltimore. But in the past few years, the homicide rate there has been cut almost in half. And the president noted that the Camden Force has built a foundation for community policing.
And perhaps most significant is that the police and residents are building trust.
So what is Camden onto? And could Baltimore learn any lessons from what's going on there? WYPR's Mary Rose Madden explains in the latest installment of our series, On the Watch.
Camden County Officer Tyrell Bagby is driving me and a videographer to his usual beat, but on the way, he sees a man stumbling, about to walk off the curb and into a busy intersection near City Hall. He leans out the window.
Boss, do me a favor real quick. Why are you standing in the middle of the street?
I was texting, wasn't paying attention.
And I know you know there's a lot of people out here that are horrible drivers. You can get hit by a car, especially the train, which is coming right now.
Right.
So just do your best and try to, you know, stand on the sidewalk, please.
The man apologizes. Bagby rolls up his window and pulls away.
That individual probably came from the methadone clinic and just got his daily dose of medication.
Bagby says he knows what people feel like when a cop pulls up to them.
I'm pretty sure when anyone in this vehicle gets stopped by police, they're a little scared because you don't know what happens.
This kind of empathy, imagining what it's like to be the other guy, builds trust. It is exactly the kind of mindset that the Camden Force wants every officer to have when they patrol. We finally get to the Hyde Point Park neighborhood, Officer Bagby's beat. And we're about to cross the street when two African-American men ride by on their bicycles.
What's going on? How's everything?
One of them is holding a bottle wrapped in a black plastic bag. Maybe it's a bottle from a liquor store. Officer Bagby could have stopped the men, but he didn't.
Is that something you would possibly stop them for?
Yeah, it's all about discretion now. And there's no point to try and harass. You know, it could be a liquor bottle. It could be one of those energy drinks. There's certain times where, you know, I'd say, hey, what do you got in there? And then they'll open it. It could be a liquor bottle, but it's closed. Or sometimes it could be open, and I just tell them, listen, you know you can't be doing that out here. You know, unfortunately, I'm going to have to ask you to, pour it out over here in the drain. Now, the good news is I'm not going to give you a ticket for this. But if you just show people respect and let them know, like, you understand, then it's not really going to be any trouble.
Bagby says his day is often a series of judgment calls, like this. Bagby came back to his hometown right after he graduated from college just so he could be a cop. That was 2013. He was part of the fresh blood that came to the department right after New Jersey officials disbanded the city's police force. All the officers were fired and had to reapply for their jobs. 30% came back with drastically reduced salaries, mainly due to cuts in overtime and fringe benefits.
So listen, they weren't tough times.
Terrence Gaynor is a security specialist for the Department of Justice. He also informally consulted on the Camden Police Department's transition. The new Camden cops were still making higher than average salaries for police officers nationwide. Even so, he says, it was very rough for morale.
And there were a lot of unhappy people and unhappy families. But on the same token, there were a lot of dedicated officers in that department who wanted to see a change and things get better. Many of the officers saw the vision and never forgot their oath of office and said, let's see where we're going to go from here.
With the money saved, the new police department could hire almost twice as many cops. Police Commissioner Scott Thompson was an advocate of community policing, meaning foot patrols, community forums, neighborhood outreach, and he had a clean slate to beef up those programs. While all this was taking place, the police department brought in brand new shiny technology. In fact, one person called the new police department both high-touch and high-tech.
Explain this to you a little bit. So this is basically what we call it a real-time crime center.
Orlando Cuevas, assistant chief of the department, has brought us into the central nervous system, as he puts it. We're surrounded by interactive maps, computers, blinking dashboards, and about 10 people quietly talking, calling officers, and pretty much just watching the screens, trying to understand which officers need to be where. They're crime analysts.
So this is how we administer all the operations throughout the day. So they run the entire operation, investigative, field operations, uniform operations. So they're like an extra set of ears and eyes for the officers on the street.
The crime analysts are watching hundreds of cameras positioned around Camden. These cameras have 360-degree visibility.
So you can pan, tilt, zoom, zoom in, zoom out very far. And so what that allows us to do is to be in neighborhoods effectively, but through use of these analysts that are positioned up here.
Cuevas shows us several tools. One is called the ShotSpotter, which detects gunfire and locates it on the map. No need to rely on people calling in to report where they think the gunshots came from.
You have the ICAN up?
Cuevas brings us over to see another piece of equipment called the ICAN. It's a virtual neighborhood watch program.
So what it does, it gives our residents access to the performance view of the camera. So imagine if you're living at 123 Main Street and we have a camera in that area and you have some quality of life issue or crime issue that's kind of persistent but doesn't really meet the needs of emergency to call 911. It's a pervasive problem. Perhaps it's a graffiti or something like that.
Cuevas says a resident can log into the system and see what police cameras are seeing. And they can communicate with the analysts in the real-time crime center.
But what it does that's so different is that it allows the analysts here to create a back-and-forth relationship where people feel as if they know exactly what's happening in their neighborhood, and they become part of the partnership to help, you know, address issues in their neighborhood.
All this technology cost millions of dollars. The department paid for it through grants, capital expenditures, and money awarded from the Department of Justice. For many criminal justice experts, the combination of community policing and high-tech crime fighting is responsible for Camden's drop in violent crime. Police response time has gone from 60 minutes to 4.5 minutes. So, can any of the lessons learned in Camden apply to Baltimore? First of all, Camden is much smaller than Baltimore. The population is 77,000. Baltimore, 620,000. And New Jersey funds a large portion of the Camden police budget. In Baltimore, the state pays a little more than 1% of the police budget. Meanwhile, Baltimore's police union has been openly hostile to reform efforts. It's been fighting a running battle with state's attorney Marilyn Mosby over the prosecution of officers involved in the Freddie Gray case, and pushed back against attempts to install community policing methods, like having civilians sit on internal police trial boards. The union is also suing the department for releasing an officer's personnel records to the Civilian Review Board. And that makes the outlook bleak for Camden-style reform in Baltimore. I'm Mary Rose Madden, reporting for 88.1 WYPR.
Our special series, On the Watch, is supported by grants from the Bendit Family Foundation, Sig and Barbara Shapiro, the Zanvale and Isabel Krieger Fund, and Open Society Institute Baltimore.